And so I went there. That was like maybe a month later. I went there to find a singer to sing my music, or singers to sing my music.
A woman?
Yes, yes. I wanted that because I had written them. All the songs that I had written up to that point were from a woman's point of view. I had no political analysis of this, but that's what I wanted. I had written Beautiful Soul during that period, 20th century drama. Consequences. Those are the songs I performed most out of that period. It hadn't occurred to me to go find a man to sing them just because I was a woman and I had sung them, and I just was trying to find someone who could sing them. I didn't feel that my voice was good enough, number one. Number two, I didn't want to perform. I saw performance as Janis Joplin and Judy Garland and all the women who had lost their hearts and their lives to some unhealthy entity called performance. And I didn't want to do that. I mean, I had spent quite a period of time getting myself together and centering and feeling good about myself and dealing with my ego and all those kind of things. And I didn't want to offer that up. That wasn't my trip. My trip was writing music. And I went there with the express purpose of finding someone to sing, someone who was into performance, to take my little soul pieces and carry them. And I performed my music, and everybody went, "Wow, you should sing your own music, you know? This is so great. Why look for a singer?" And I immediately went on a huge ego trip. I got winged out entirely. Totally out of control. I was overwhelmed. I didn't know how to deal with it. And I wasn't dumb. I'd called it as it was, you know. And I decided after that that I wouldn't perform. For sure I wouldn't perform. And my self said, it's not good to be controlled by anything, especially your fear. As long as you're controlled by this out-of-control ego you have here, you've got to deal with it. Otherwise, it'll just come up in another way. And I thought about it a lot and made a decision that I would perform until I wasn't scared anymore. And so out of the Sacramento thing, someone asked me to come and do a concert in Los Angeles as part of a presentation that Jill Johnston was giving on her book.
Which book?
Amazon Nation, I think is what it's called.
Lesbian Nation.
Lesbian Nation, yeah. And I went there, and I did not even know how to use a microphone until that concert. I walked into the Veterans Memorial Building at San Luis Obispo and asked the caretaker if he would plug in a microphone and let me practice with it. And he said, "Oh, sure, you know, unless you're singing that kind of rock music." And I said, no, this is pretty music, you know, don't have to worry. And I practiced. I spent a couple of days just practicing how to use a microphone. And from that concert in Los Angeles, I was asked to do another concert. And that is literally how my life as a performer has gone, from gig to gig to gig. I never pursued it. That was not my idea. And as recently as a year ago, I did not relate as a performer. Even though people were relating to me more and more as not only a songwriter, but also as a performer. During which timing, there were a whole bunch of changes that occurred, too. I got politicized. The women's movement organized me, basically. I went to a women's music festival in Champaign-Urbana. First National Women's Music Festival. Up to that time, I had been performing in Los Angeles more and more, the particular events at the Women's Building. And since I wasn't pursuing a career as a performer, I didn't go out and get any concerts at all. I just, if someone asked me to do it, I would do it. And what happened was that more and more the women's community in Los Angeles was asking me to perform. I'd never thought of myself as performing for the women's movement. It was not my idea. That's just where I was performing. And I didn't have a plan of action in terms of where I would perform, where I wouldn't perform, because I wasn't thinking like that. So I went to Champaign-Urbana and met a whole group of women who were doing a lot of the same kinds of things I was doing. There was not a thing called women's music at that time. It was not called feminist music, per se, or woman-identified music.
What year is this?
This is 1973. I went there because a woman named Joan Lowe, who is now going to be engineering my album and engineered Meg Christian's and also Chris Williamson's. Joan Lowe sent a little note that she had received from Champaign-Urbana to a woman named Barbara McLean in Los Angeles, who was working with Vicki Randall and also me doing music. I was writing music and Vicki was singing it. And Joan sent this thing to Barbara saying, there's this thing happening. I don't know, you may be interested if you know anyone who'd like to go. So Vicki and I decided we'd go. And I met at Champaign-Urbana at the First National Women's Music Festival, Chris Williamson, Meg Christian, Cassie Culver, Jennifer Abbott of the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band, Mary Wings and Robin Flower. I already knew Woody Simmons from Sacramento. They formed the Clinch Mountain Backsteppers, and that was the first time the Clinch Mountain Backsteppers had performed, was at Champaign-Urbana. Kay Gardner, Susan Abbott, who was late of the Chicago Women's Liberation Rock Band, and a whole bunch of other people. They all were there, you know? And we all looked at each other and went, oh, geez, this is so wonderful. We were all doing real different things. Our goals at the particular time were different, but we all recognized each other and acknowledged the similarities of what we were doing. And out of that, everything else grew. I would say that Sacramento and Champaign-Urbana were the two real heavy impact situations for women's music as I know it now.
It started to grow from there.
Yeah. I think, to say it started to grow, I think that in all fairness and reality, it started to grow with people like Jennifer Abbott in the New Haven Women's Liberation Rock Band and her sister Susan in Chicago, and women like Barbara Dane and Beverly Grant and Ruthie Gordon. These are, I mean, all women who were operating, Malvina Reynolds, operating not in a situation that would be called woman-identified necessarily, not necessarily in the women's movement, but they were all independent, strong women doing their work outside the system, outside the industry, and speaking about society in some ways beyond a one-down position that most women.
But up until the festival, that was all
separate, speaking from.
Basically.
Oh yeah, I think we were.
Getting together and
yeah, I think that. All those women were doing it separately.
And it came together.
And it came together, I think, at that point. Women's music. What is it? 2 years ago, I knew better than I do now. I think 2 years ago, I was more presumptuous than I am now also. I feel humbled by how broad it is. Generally, and I think that's the only way we can define it at this point in time, is to generalize. It feels real important to me that women's music be defined broadly enough, especially now, so that it includes the possibility of as many women as possible. In terms of the lyric content, I think it's real clear how women's music is different. And that's, at this point in my mind, the best way to define what women's music is to say what it's not. And immediately to compare it with the music that exists on the radio today. I think that, first of all, generally, women's music is music which does not in any way denigrate women, does not present women in oppressive or one-down kinds of positions. It's music that is dedicated, I would say, to drawing a three-dimensional image of women, which has to do with women's strengths, has to do with self-affirmation, self-definition, independence, all those things just individually in defining women as solo individuals. And also it has to do with women working with other women, solidarity, women caring for each other, women loving each other. I think those two areas are the most overtly different from the kind of music that is on the radio now in terms of how women deal with each other. You have songs on the radio that are either women commiserating with each other because they've lost their men, or they are in competition with each other for the same man. And I think that right away, one of the things that women's music does is to define a lot more possibilities of the way that women can relate to each other. And also how a lot more possibilities of how women can relate to other people, men and women, and relate to themselves, women viewing themselves differently than the classic ways that women have been seen and have seen themselves. I was born a woman, I was born to be hurt. Or a woman making a statement to another woman, stand by your man. Or, oh gee, there are all sorts of songs out of the 60s and 70s. Going out of my head, whether it's sung by a man or by a woman, is unhealthy. It's just an unhealthy way to deal. I mean, the idea of songs in general saying, when you're with me, I'm whole. When you're not with me, I'm only half a person. If you leave me, I'll die. All those kinds of things, whether they're sung by a man or by a woman, are just as unhealthy. And I think that they present and reinforce a kind of relationship between human beings that's unhealthy. I mean, that's the best word. I mean, we're not going to change things outside ourselves if we're operating always from one down, one up positions. And
with the definition you've given right now, a liberated man could write that kind of music.
I think in terms of lyric content, it is possible that a liberated person, male or female, could write about certain aspects of feminist thought. I mean, the things I'm talking about I see as basic tenets of feminism. I do not see feminism in opposition to humanism. I see both of those on the continuum of each other and overlapping all the time. That's my own definition, and I want to say that in terms of talking about women's music and defining out women's music, everything that I say is only my definition. Even as we talk about how broad women's music is, that has to do with how unique it is has to do with the fact that there are so many different kinds of women doing it and that they have different visions about what it is. I feel like the general things that it can be said, that can be said about it, are that it is talking about new and healthy relationships between men and women and women and women and men and men, basically people. And that it has to do with women relating to the world in a new way. I don't think that discussing those kinds of thoughts and issues as they come up in the songs is something that only women can do. I think that the fact is that at this point in time there are a whole group of women who are consciously doing that. There may very well come a time where it is not necessary or even valuable to call women's music women's music. At this point in time, in my mind, the reason for defining it out as different and saying, labeling it as women's music is the fact that there is a whole group of women who are doing it, and they're doing it on purpose with a goal in mind. And we want to say that it is unique and that it exists as an entity unto itself at this time. I hope for a time where it will be so clear and so universally accepted that it won't be necessary to label it. I see, you know, labeling in general as being a limiting kind of thing, but women are being limited all around, everywhere, all the time, and I feel like it's incumbent on us to define out how we are going to be labeled, what we are going to say we are, and take responsibility for defining exactly what we mean by it. You know, women's music to me is something that's accessible to everyone. It is possible for anyone who listens and who is sensitive to apprehend exactly what we're talking about. The definition of women's music is something that's still evolving, I think, and it has everything to do, I think, with not only the performers and the songwriters, but also the audience and what the audience sees as women's music. I mean, there's a big question, is women's music any music done by women? And there are some people who think that. And that's part of the problem with calling it women's music rather than women-identified music or feminist music. But the problem with calling it feminist music is that makes it all political, and political in the sense of as political can be alienating, as political terms like Democrat and Republican, radical, liberal, feminist, nationalist, all those things are political words, and they're all distorted, and they're all subject to individuals' definitions of what they mean. The problem is that people already think, even using the term women's music, if you start talking about strong women, three-dimensional images of women, music that has to do with equal relationships between people. There are some people who think talking about those things is real political, that's somehow radical music. Talking about women's music to some people means anti-male, virulent, hostile, angry kinds of songs. And some of women's music has to do with anger, for sure. It has to do with hostility. It has to do with letting out the fury righteously. But in trying to communicate this new cultural entity that women are getting in touch with and creating, there needs to be some term that allows people to feel okay about coming to hear it. And that was my sense of why we use the term women's music. Some of women's music is overtly political. Some of the songs that Meg Christian has written, Alex Dobkin, Holly Near, some of my songs, some of the songs that we have written that did not have an overtly political initiation have become political by our redefinitions of what they mean, so that the songs out of context don't necessarily mean political things. But if you put I've Got a Fury in the context of Inez Garcia and the right of women to defend themselves, then that song becomes real political. Ultimately, I think that there is a confusion about what political means. I have been accused of being too political. I have been accused of being too political, and I've been accused of not being political enough. Depending on where the particular person is coming from, in my mind, the music that's on the radio now, AM music, is real political. It is suggesting to us ways that we should behave with each other. It is telling us how we should see each other. And it is reinforcing particular ways of behaving in relation to ourselves, to other people, and to the world. That, to me, is real political. The fact that so many of the singers, men and women, are saying, if you leave me, I will die. Please stay with me. I'll get down on my knees, Daddy, if you'll just stay. That's real political. And so for people to say, well, is this women's music stuff real political? Yes, but we better define what we mean by that. Talking about the struggles of a particular group of women, working class women, women standing in welfare lines, that's political, for sure. So is music about how women treat each other and how women treat men, how men treat women. Under My Thumb is an incredibly political song. In the same way that I see the women's movement as being a woman-loving kind of movement, I see a whole movement that is reflected in music as being woman-hating. Some of it is sung by women and some sung by men. And Under My Thumb is, the obvious example. I mean, that's just one of them. There are lots and lots and lots, most, in fact. I think that that's changing. I think that there's, even as we have backlash and it's even more radically anti-woman or anti-strong woman, there is music that does exist that isn't that way, and I think that to say all the music on the radio is anti-woman or anti-strong woman is fallacious. But I think that there are so few examples of it compared to the kinds of music that it does that do get airplay all the time, that present women as potential sex objects or wives or not good enough, all the kinds of ways that women are presented. The exceptions to that are exceptions because they're just not enough.
When you do hear them, you just kind of go,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I Am Woman. Everyone says, well, what about I Am Woman? And I say, well, what about it? That song exists. There is not another song like that song.
Because when I first brought up the idea of this show, that's what they thought I was going to try, you know, and just that over and over again, because they couldn't think of anything else.
I think in talking about women's music and how it's different, I would not want to suggest that all of the music that I write is overtly political or even covertly political. There are some songs that I write that don't have anything to do with social change or social realities. Would You Like to Tap Dance on the Moon, for example, is just a froth tune. And it was written out of that spirit, you know, just the joyous spirit. You can analyze the song and say, well, in a world where the grown-ups want to make the donuts without holes, it's not easy to keep the child within his hole. Well, that's real. There's social significance there. If you want to do that, you can, but that's not where I was coming from. Best Friend, on the other hand, I see as a political song in the sense that what it is talking about is a person affirming herself, you know, and now that I am grown, my best friend lives inside of me. That may be a very simple way of saying it, but my sense is real clearly that we will not make a successful revolution if the individuals who are working on it are not together. And I see a whole type of women's music being that which is transcendently feminist, transcendently humanist, transcendently political, in the sense of being all the values that have to do with being strong people and being people who are aware of the world beyond themselves. I'm not talking about songs that are introspective and have only to do with me, have only to do with the person. Love songs per se don't go beyond me in relation to one other person. I think that in women's music, the love songs, what is important about the love songs is that they go beyond that just by the fact that they're talking about two people in a different way. What would be an example of that? Sweet Woman, for sure. The fact that it's one woman to another woman. Valentine's song, Meg's song, Valentine's song. The kind of relationship that's being talked about in that song. It's a real strong relationship between two individuals, recognizing each other's strengths. Holly's song started out fine about a relationship, goes beyond the relationship and says something beyond it. Beautiful Soul, suggesting the importance, talking about the importance of women supporting each other, beginning with a concern, one woman's concern for another, which can be elevated or expanded to women's concern for women in general, and how we do that with each other, and how if we support each other, we can build and grow with the combined strengths that we have. Sweet Friend of Mine, originally written about one person, one woman, saying, I'm so glad, you know, that we have met here and gotten it together, and we're going to be working together. It's so neat. I sing that song now as a glorious tribute to all the women who have come into the women's movement and have come into women's communities across the country and are working together, you know. And the song says, you know, it took so long to find you, all the growing pains behind you, right up till now. I don't know, I'll just go on and on. I want to talk about how the music is different formally in the structure of it. I think that even though all of us come from the traditions of Western music and the theoretical principles of Bach, Schoenberg, Stockhausen, who have defined out how music goes together, all of whom were white, middle to upper class, Northern Europeans. It makes sense that there's at least a possibility that there would be some kind of formal characteristics or theoretical principles, ways of putting sounds together, ways of organizing pitched wind that would be essentially woman-identified. I think there has to be that possibility, and I believe there is. I believe it's already in operation. I used to be able to define it much more accurately than I would presume, not accurately, much more definitely than I would presume to define it now. I think that it's not by accident that my music, there are parts of my music, chordally, melody with chords, rhythms in relation to melody and chords, tonalities, all the kinds of things that go into making the music, not the lyrics, just the music part. It's not surprising, and it's not by accident, and it's not coincidental that my music has similarities with Laura Nyro and Joni Mitchell and Woody Simmons and Chris Williamson and Meg Christian and Cassie Culver and Kay Gardner and Sally Avedikian, just to name a few off the top of my head. It's not by accident, and it doesn't have to do with the fact that we've heard each other. Because when I was writing my music, I hadn't heard Laura Nyro yet. I hadn't heard Joni Mitchell. I hadn't heard Chris Williamson. And none of them had heard me. And yet, if you were to go in and analyze the music, there are similarities in there. And I ask the question, why? Okay, why?
So that if women who are in touch with themselves, who have been writing music, and had a limited background in, let's say, the male-oriented music, sat down and started creating, you really feel that there would be two different types of music?
You say women who are in touch with themselves, and women who had limited contact with the music of the industry or music written by men. I don't think it's possible to not have contact with that music. I wish sometimes to the depth of my soul that I did not study piano, that I had not studied theory, so that the music that would be coming out of me as I write would be more clearly my own and not influenced by what my ear automatically does. I automatically resolve certain chords to other chords because I have heard it done that way over and over and over again in all the songs. To resolve to a different key, to modulate into places that have no or few validations in the music that we've heard all our lives is not easy to do because it doesn't sound right.
But you do it.
Oh, yes, I do. And I'm doing it on, absolutely.
I can't go that way because that's the way it's been done before.
It's part of it's conscious and part of it has to do with me wanting to be creative. I mean, I don't want to sound like the music that's gone before me. I don't want to sound like something that's already been done. I mean, part of being a creative person, regardless of what you're doing, a painter, any kind of thing where you are creating something, part of the creative thing has to do with not copying, not being derivative, but being original. That doesn't have to do with my politics. That has to do with being an artist, being a creative force. And I think that realizing that there's a possibility that there is a woman's aesthetic, that there is woman's music that comes from some kind of collective woman's musical unconscious, realizing that there's that possibility makes me want to push myself to get there. It's easier to resolve the way that I have heard over and over. It's easier to take a melody where it would go to my ear most naturally. It's easier to keep the rhythm simple because that's how it is. That's how it is done over and over and over again. It's harder to push the form. Just because, not only because of my limitations as a listener of music and what I have heard, but also because of the audience. It'd be great, you know, I go and write this incredibly complex, different and unusual piece, and the audience sits there for a minute and a half and goes, God, I can't get this. Well, the melody hasn't repeated itself. I don't have a handle. This music's not accessible. And I think that even as we're pushing the form and trying to find things, trying to find ways of putting the melody and the chords and the rhythm together in a way that expresses our woman space, we all always have to keep in mind that that form must maintain some kind of accessibility or we're going to lose the audience. Now, I want to build our audience. I want to take the words and the performance of the words and the music to as many people as I possibly can. And part of what that means is that I must maintain accessibility as a writer and as a performer. That I must speak what I have to say, my mind's information, my heart's information, my politics information, in a way that people can understand. There are lots of languages that we speak in. If I were to speak only in one language, then I would speak to only one type of people, only to the people that speak that language. And I'm trying to learn how to speak as many possible languages just within English, you know.
So your writing is really conscious about, you know, exactly what you're doing. I mean, you're getting an initial flow, but then you very consciously take it through its steps so that you're thinking about who you're reaching, you know, will you be able to reach somebody with this? Is it beyond their capability to grasp it?
I think that I never think about, will this be beyond the capability of their being able to grasp it. It's not being beyond. It's speaking in a language that they will understand. That's not I'm high and they're low. It's like, it's on a continuum. Like, performing Lost in Inner Space, there are certain places I don't perform that song. Mm-hmm. The reason why is because it doesn't relate to some people. And I have been approached maybe once or twice by women who have said, I don't relate to Lost in Inner Space. I feel like, this is early on when I started performing the song, I feel like you assume everyone has the luxury of the time to explore themselves, and I'm trying to survive. I have two kids, and I don't have time to go off, you know. I didn't understand that. I have been so educated by women about my music and about my responsibility. What I try to say now, I try to make it real clear where the song came from in me and what it is I see it relating to. I think that the biggest problem is assuming everyone has had our experience, our individual experience as a woman. And I am limited by my race and by my class and by my individual experience in the world, which is real heavily colored by those two things. And what I have learned in performing over the past 3 years is that I can't assume that everyone knows that stuff. What usually happens in writing a song is that I start out with a rhythm. This isn't always so, but in the latest song that I've written, Baby Child, I could take you through kind of how the song happened. It's not on the tape, no. I'm sorry to say. Maybe we should do another one. Lost in Inner Space would be a good one. I had a rhythm which occurs in the middle of the song, which is the fast cluster chords, jazzy, syncopated rhythm. I'd been playing that rhythm, those chord changes in that rhythm, for about 6 months. Didn't have a melody, didn't have any words, didn't know what I was going to say at all. Just playing it because I liked how it sounded. It seemed real hot when I played it. I loved it because it was hot. And didn't have any idea where I would go. And I do that a lot. I have little motifs, little musical pieces. And I reached the point where in my life I was feeling like I just couldn't take the pressure of performing and trying to write and trying to be a good person, trying to be clear about what I was doing with my music and what I was doing as a woman, as a public person who was being given power, all those kinds of things. And I overamped, I overloaded with all the pressure and all the focus on me, and I took off some time. And right at the point of where I took off the time, I was feeling real crazy, and I started out at the piano, as I was doing a lot then, just sitting at the piano playing chords, just looking, searching around on the piano, and singing out words, which is a lot of times how I write, just singing out words. What is it? What are you feeling? When I'm writing a lot, it doesn't take me long to get in touch at all. Now, it takes me a long time to get through all the stuff that I'm feeling down to what it is that I'm going to actually write about, because all the surface stuff is intellectual and intellectualized. And it comes out, usually when I start writing after I haven't written for a while, I have two or three throwaway songs. They're just uncorkers. They just uncork this, whatever it is in there that's going to be the beautiful song. I wrote maybe, that time I wrote one or two songs which were uncorkers before Inner Space came. And I got in touch with this feeling of, I just want to hand it over. I want to abdicate responsibility and hand it over. And I started singing, "Everything's done for you here. Everything's run for you here. Isn't it easier, you know? Why not decide to stay lost in Inner Space, you know?" I was writing, you know, "There, it's so silent here." Just like, you know, get the straitjacket and carry me off, man. I'm checking out. I am checking out. And I wrote, and it was going along, and I had two verses of the song, and came to the what's called the bridge, or the internal part of the song where you usually change into a different something. And I, for some reason, I put that piece in, that fast syncopated piece, and what came out was the conflict. You know, is it better to just center yourself and just stay inside yourself, or is it better to go out there and try to make some social change, try to change stuff out there, try to impact and interface with the world, you know, and try to do the work out there, or do you just retire, isolate yourself, and write the music and send it out, you know? That's what all that inner part of that song is about, and there's a tremendous churning and going around in the song.
Seems like a lot of women's music has that tension release, tension.
Absolutely, absolutely. It exists also not only in the rhythmic changes. I mean, that song starts out with a slow, almost dirge-like quality, and then gets into this real tense, fast, conflicted kind of chords, rubbing chords, and then goes back out, opens back out. That's one way of doing it. I think it also exists in the suspensions, creating a dissonance in the music itself. Chris's music does this a lot. Creating a dissonance and then opening it up. A dissonance and opening up. In music, it's called suspensions. In Beautiful Soul, the whole progression of the first part of the song, "I wonder where you are," "I wonder what you're thinking," all that passage there, there's a pedal tone. It's another thing that I find in women's music a lot. A note holding some kind of foundation. I mean, we can get symbolic real quick, and I would not want to do that. But some kind of what is called a pedal tone, one note that holds, whereas the chords and the melody are progressing through all these chords. In Beautiful Soul, you have one note held being played in the bass through that whole first passage, and there are like four or five different chord changes that go on. And part of what's happening in the chord changes is suspension, release, suspension, resolve, suspension, resolve. The whole progression is that way. Lots of my songs have suspensions, all of which resolve, suspend, resolve. I don't think it's by accident.
Yeah,
you know,
coming out in your mind of, you know, going through your own life of problems, resolving those problems, you know, or tensions, whatever, and then is also coming out in the music.
I think so. I think that's, to say that's the reason why I use suspensions, I would not want to say that. But I think that the creation of stress and resolve and how that mirrors itself in women's music is something that I'm doing. You know, whether or not it has to do with problem solving and modeling problem solving in the music, I don't know. I don't know if I would want to make that leap of faith. But anyway, in the song, in Lost in Inner Space, what happened was that the middle section becomes the presentation of the conflict, not only musically, but lyrically,